Our next case is Samsung and Apple versus Neonode, 2023-1464. Ms. Degnan.
May it please the Court, Lauren Degnan for Appellant, Apple, and Samsung.
So you're dealing with limitation 1D.
Yes, Your Honor.
Same patent.
So under the Board's own findings, Hirayama 307 renders limitation 1D obvious, and this Court should reverse the Board's contrary decision. Specifically, the Board found that Hirayama was ambiguous as to whether the icon is relocated or duplicated during the gesture, the moving of the pen. Due to that ambiguity, there's a gap, a silence, so to speak, in the reference itself. And because there are only a finite number of identified predictable solutions or design choices, we have shown that limitation 1D would have been obvious under KSR and in cases from this Court like Uber.
Can you point us to the record where you made the argument, this two-option argument, to the Board?
Yes, Your Honor. So Appendix 543 is the reply. 543, Your Honor. And so in the reply, at the last full paragraph before the subheading D, we argued that it would have been at least obvious to Opposa to implement Hirayama 307 user interface in both, one, a way that does not drag icon 41, and two, a way in which icon 41 is dragged during the gliding of the pen. So those are the two options. And we go on to say that Opposa...
You're talking about a person of ordinary skill in the art.
Yes.
You don't have a word count problem here, so you can speak English.
Fair enough, Your Honor. So that person of ordinary skill in the art would have recognized that those implementations would have had benefits and drawbacks, making both implementation reasonable choices. Now, I acknowledge that the buzzwords KSR, Uber, finite number of limited predictable choices is not there. But in substance, we believe that this is fundamentally the same argument we're making on appeal. Certainly, we are expanding and clarifying that argument given the Board's findings. But we would say that this is not a completely new concept in the record on appeal.
But is that the full extent of your articulation of it to the Board, this one paragraph in your reply?
This is the best place where we made
it. I recognize the best. Is it the only?
I would say essentially yes, Your Honor. And certainly in the petition, we rely on the same reference, the same portion of the reference for single reference obviousness, but the petition doesn't have this sort of language. And this is the language that we added to respond to the argument that Hirayama, rather than disclosing the absence, not reproducing the icon, disclose the opposite. This is it, Your Honor.
Why should we not say that in context, this one paragraph kind of hidden at the middle of your reply, it's just not enough to have fairly presented the issue and to have given the Board and the patentee a chance to deal with it before we get it?
So if you think that this is not enough, we would say that as forfeiture is a discretionary doctrine, you should decline to find forfeiture here because the argument, sort of the fully flushed out argument under KSR and Uber arises due to the Board's own findings that the reference is ambiguous. And in cases like Yita that we cited in our brief, when the Board makes findings that suggest a certain outcome under this Court's precedent, this Court should step in and make sure...
Yeah, but that doesn't really quite correspond to the analysis of the Board as I read it. At page 30, which I think is kind of important, I mean, that's where they say it could be at least as likely. It's a battle... I see this case as a battle of the experts. So you can tell me... A battle of the experts. So you can tell me why I'm wrong. And I think the Board, in various respects, credited Dr. Rosenberg, in favor of Dr. Benderson. Why isn't that sufficient, given our standard of review, to decide this case. I mean, even if we all conclude, yes, it's ambiguous, yes, maybe it's a close call, the board did what it should do in these circumstances, which is consult the extrinsic evidence, listen to the experts. It certainly went through an analysis of the experts, and it picked one.
So my response to that, it may be a multi-part way. First, I would say the board did not find that Hirayama, I didn't accept Dr. Rosenberg's analysis, didn't find that Hirayama actually does disclose reproducing the icon. It doesn't make a call one way or the other. It says we had not met our burden to prove it doesn't just move the icon. It treated it almost as an anticipation or inherent anticipation as opposed to the...
Well, it is your burden, right?
It is our burden to prove obviousness. But I think when you read the crediting of their expert versus our expert was really focused on, you know, which is it clear which way this reference is going? And what we see in the findings, even on Appendix 52, it says the evidence is mixed, that there's evidence to show it teaches not...
So the board had a bundle of ambiguous evidence and experts. It credited one expert and got to a result. Given that the burden is yours, what's improper about what the board did, unless you can establish that some of the underpinnings of Dr. Robertson's analysis or whatever were just really wrong and not, you know, wrong in this record?
Because it was not enough for the board simply to indicate that the reference doesn't explicitly disclose not reproducing the icon.
But the board also found industry praise, and your client took a license.
So on the industry praise aspect of it, as you know, our second issue is relating to the errors the board made with respect to Nexus. That industry praise was tied to a swiping gesture, a swipe-based user interface.
But wasn't it what's covered by the claimed?
Certainly, we did not appeal. We did not challenge the finding that the particular device was covered by the claim, but that's not the end of the inquiry in a Nexus analysis. This is not a presumption of Nexus analysis, and ultimately, the board had to, when it was looking for Nexus...
In other words, you're saying industry praise must relate to a particular claim limitation?
We're not saying a particular claim limitation, Your Honor. What we're saying under this court's law is that it has to cover... It can't be to non-claimed features, and it can't be to claims features that are in the prior art. Here, Neonos has posited that the claim as a whole is what is not in the prior art, but the praise is exclusively tied towards swiping gestures, and there's two important things to remember. There are lots of swiping gestures in that product. And the claim, limitation 1C, talks about a gesture or movement that activates a function. In that product, there's swipes that do not activate a function.
Hypothesize a chemical compound, which has a nucleus and a lot of substituents. And it's a commercial success. Industry praise, everyone praises it. And the nexus has to be to a particular substituent, like a methyl group or a phenyl group. It's the whole compound, isn't it? Compound that's claimed.
I think in the compound, if the whole compound is claimed is what is getting the praise, I think your hypothetical would be fine because you're looking at what is different from the prior art and it's said to be the entire compound and the entire compound.
Well, certainly the methyl group is in the prior art and the phenyl group is in the prior art.
What we're saying here, Your Honor, is that the praise is exclusively directed to the swiping gesture, not the claim as a whole. Because the claim as a whole includes element 1D, which is the reaction that happens. And there was some discussion in the prosecution history. It's abundantly clear that element 1C is completely different than element 1D.
How about the license?
The license, again, the evidence that was pointed to by the board in Appendix 51, the board finds that the license, Samsung's interest in taking a license related to the intuitive swipe-based gestures. Again, the board focused exclusively on swipe-based gestures.
In other words, we're taking a license not because we might be infringing the whole claim, but because we like one limitation rather than another?
I think we have to look at the findings by the board, and they were based on the swipe-based gesture and the fact that Samsung at that time, when the claims had not issued, had not been done, the application. And importantly, the application doesn't include any discussion that corresponds to limitation 1D, about not reproducing the icon.
Didn't the board make a finding, though, that 1D, that negative limitation, is part of the swiping that then it found, as part of the swiping, which it then found was the source, or there was a nexus to that, and the industry praise, and the license.
So we would disagree, Your Honor, that it was a finding, because it's really claim interpretation. So whether limitation 1D is part of the swiping really turns entirely on the language of the claim. So I don't think it's a finding, it was a conclusion.
Let's go to page 50. I'm sure you're familiar with this sentence. The board says that the gestures do not relocate or duplicate representation of the function during the swiping operation as per limitation 1D is part of what distinguishes the swiping gestures as a whole from drag and drop gestures in the prior art. That's not a finding?
I would say it's a conclusion, and it should not be treated as a finding for purposes of appeal, because it's based on looking at the claim language and determining that what's called out in limitation 1D is actually part of the swiping gesture, which is plainly recited exclusively in limitation 1C.
So are you saying our review of that sentence should be de novo, but for you to win, I still need to say this is wrong?
It is. Yes, you have to agree with me that it's wrong, and if I could elaborate, we believe it is wrong because the element 1C talks about the gesture. If we look at the prosecution history, more than a year and a half later, element 1D is added by amendment. The examiner does not consider element 1C discussing the gesture to include this aspect. And if you think about it technically, the gesture, for want of a better word, happens sort of what's happening to the screen or above the screen. The reaction is sort of what the screen is doing to you, maybe below the screen. And so I think both logically, claim language, and factually, the gesture, the movement, is utterly different from the reaction to that movement, whether or not that icon is duplicated during the gesture.
Counsel, you're about to enter your rebuttal time. Do you want to continue or save it?
I will save it.
Mr. Graves.
Thank you, Your Honor. So, responding to this issue concerning nexus first, I would say that this is not a claim construction issue, and we can clearly see at Appendix 50, the board is making a finding, and this is an issue of fact, not an issue of claim construction. And what the board is saying here is that limitation 1D is part of or an element of the swiping gestures that were so highly praised in the art. We submitted copious evidence of industry praise for the Neonode N1 and N2 phones, and that praise was focused on the ability of the user to interact with the device using a simple swiping gesture. Limitation 1D, reciting that the relocation is not duplicated or relocated during the gliding, is a part of what instantiates the swiping gestures that were so highly praised. So there is more than sufficient support in the record for the board's finding.
But given that it's added, as you heard from your friend, a year later, and there's no reference to 1C, why shouldn't we view that at least as a claim construction question of law that we review de novo?
Well, because it's, again, it's really not a claim construction issue. The court is looking to the connection between limitation 1D, you know, standing on its own, and the swiping gestures that were so highly praised, and is saying that the fact that the gestures not relocate or duplicate during the swiping operation is part of what distinguishes the swiping gestures as a whole from drag and drop gestures in the prior art. and then provides a reason, because with a swiping gesture that includes limitation 1D, the user can control the device without the complexity of dragging an item or dropping it to a particular location. Again, that's a factual issue. So I would submit that it is reviewed under a substantial evidence standard of review, and it's supported by substantial evidence. But, Your Honor, even if the court were to determine that its review on this issue is de novo, again, the board got it right, appellant has provided no well-founded reason for this court to make a conclusion that's contrary to the conclusion arrived at by the board. All right. With respect to the design choice issue, appellants say that the board committed an error of law, but really what it looks like to me is that appellant is complaining about the board's findings of fact. Critically, appellant does not contest the majority of the findings of fact underlying the board's conclusion here. Instead, what they do is they're raising this new design choice argument. And as we point out in our briefs, that's not an argument that was raised below. And the single paragraph in their expert's declaration submitted with their reply brief doesn't suffice to raise the issue.
Well, let's assume for the sake of argument that we would consider the argument. So what's your substantive response to the argument?
I'll get to that in a moment. First, there are none of the typical or standard rationales for the court to exercise its discretion to consider an argument that's been forfeited apply here, as we point out in our brief. So the court should not exercise its discretion here. This does not fit within any of the standard exceptions to the general rule of forfeiture. And appellants have made the argument that, well, somehow that the board found that Hirayama was ambiguous and that somehow that justifies exercising the court's discretion to avoid forfeiture. Hey, first of all, the board did not find that Hirayama was ambiguous. What the board found was that petitioner had failed to make its case of a motivation to modify Hirayama to make its draggable icons non-draggable. All right, that's what the board found. There was no finding here of ambiguity. You will search the FWD in vain for a finding by the board that Hirayama was ambiguous.
Don't they say that both interpretations of Hirayama are equally plausible at a certain point?
At least as likely.
Or at least as likely. Yeah.
Page 30.
I think there were a number of factual issues that the board looked at. And on some of them, the board did find that the petitioner had failed to make its case because petitioner's view of the evidence was no more likely than
they're checking what the two experts said, which is the result here, and they say that Rosenberg's interpretation to be at least as likely as that proposed by Dr. Benderson.
Okay, yes, Your Honor, with respect to this particular issue dealing with the argument concerning the presence of icon 41 at the original location in figures 3A and 3B, but overall, on Appendix 33, the board stated, we regard Hirayama 307's reference to a vacant icon position as mild evidence.
Hold on, where are you? On 33?
Appendix 33, yes.
And where are you reading from?
The second paragraph. So this is another one of the specific factual issues. Uh-huh. As at least mild evidence that Hirayama 307's icon activation process involves relocating or duplicating icon 41. The disclosure in Hirayama 878 further supports this interpretation. So overall, what the board found was, with respect to these five or six different factual issues, on some of them, there was ambiguity in Hirayama, But on, I believe, at least two of them, the board found that the evidence weighed in favor of patent owner's position. So I would submit, again, the board made no finding that Hirayama was ambiguous. What the board did is it examined the factual arguments, a number of different factual arguments that were made by petitioner and responded to by Neonode. With respect to some of them, the board did find some ambiguity or lack of clarity, and found that because of that, petitioner had failed to prove its case. With respect to others, the board found that the evidence favored Neonode. So overall, I would say that does not suffice to show a finding of ambiguity. Second, even if the board had made a finding that Hirayama is ambiguous, that alone would not support the proposition that the board should here exercise its discretion to avoid forfeiture, because that's completely irrelevant to the issue of whether whether appellant's new design choice argument is supported by the evidence that was in the record before the PTAB. So moving on, I know, Your Honor, you asked us for a substantive position with respect to the design choice argument. So what is the evidence that was submitted below? Well, really, appellants didn't submit any evidence below to support their design choice argument, as one would expect, since they didn't actually make the argument. What they submitted was primarily evidence from their expert that using a cursor to establish the position of a pen on a display was a well-known, and a Posito would have considered that to be sufficient to provide information about the location of the pen. And there were a couple of other items of testimony from their experts submitted with their reply brief as well, none of them that the board found credible. And with respect to those additional items of testimony, again, none of them were directed to facts that would support their design choice argument. So there's simply no evidence in the record to support that.
Well, the design choice argument, as I understand it, is there were only a couple different ways to do things, and it makes sense for anybody to have picked any one of those.
Yes, that would be one iteration of the design choice argument. But, Your Honor, they didn't submit any evidence to support the proposition A, right, that in order for there to be a design choice argument, you do need to show that there are only a couple of ways to do something, but you also need to show, as per KSR, a market pressure or a design need to change a particular reference that's being pointed to, right? You need both of those things. And they didn't submit any evidence on either one of those factual predicates for their design choice argument.
I thought it's at least undisputed on the first factual predicate with respect to limitation 1D. Either you can design it to see the icon or representation move as you're dragging it, or you design it not to see it move as you're dragging it. Isn't that undisputed?
No, it's not, Your Honor. So, and the reason we dispute that is that by putting the focus on limitation 1D, you're actually not performing the analysis that's required by the Graham v. John Deere case and KSR, right, which focuses on the differences between the prior art and the claim at issue, right? So if you look at 1D, which is a negative limitation, and say, well, because this is a negative limitation, there are always just two ways to do this. Either you do it or you don't, right? You're abstracting from the prior art that the court is supposed to be applying or looking at in juxtaposition with the claim, and you're just focusing on the claim limitation itself. And that sort of focus is inconsistent with the Graham case and KSR and would render nearly every negative limitation useless as a means of avoiding prior art because it would render every negative claim limitation subject to this design choice argument. We would submit that is not the correct analysis. Under KSR, what the court needs to do, if it were to entertain this design choice argument, is to look at Hirayama. Hirayama is the reference they started with. You look at Hirayama just as the Supreme Court looked at the Asano reference and asked, starting with Hirayama, is there evidence in the record of a design need or market pressure to make a change to Hirayama that would be addressed?
But the board said each of the, when they looked at the reference, this is kind of an odd case. They're looking at the reference, which doesn't say anything, and they're saying it's at least as likely that it says one, says A or B, right?
No, I disagree, Your Honor. The board ultimately rejected petitioner's argument that Hirayama teaches a non-draggable icon 41. The board said, you have not proven that. Okay, so the board did not find it. It's just, you know, it's equally likely. Again, there were, I believe, two factual...
Well, let me ask you hypothetically. If I read them as saying they're equally likely, do you still win simply because the burden is on them and not on you?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Okay. Yes. Yes. So returning to the design choice, right, since that's the argument they're making on appeal, returning to the design choice argument, they have to lay the factual predicate, and they can't just point to limitation 1D, say it's a negative limitation, you do or you don't, so there are only two ways to do it. They have to identify a design need, market pressure, or a problem with Hirayama that would be addressed by changing Hirayama to make icon 41 non-draggable. And they simply provided no evidence to support any of those factual predicates. So it really ultimately doesn't matter whether there are only two ways of addressing a potential problem here or 20. They haven't laid the factual predicate that would bring into play a design choice type of argument. In addition, defining the problem in any design choice type argument, defining the problem is important. And, you know, with respect to KSR, the problems were defined in a way that was very tightly focused on the references at issue. The Asano reference, for instance. Here below, they defined no problem that would be addressed by any, by their proposed modification to Hirayama. And in fact,
Counsel,
yes,
you have
Your Honor.
A concluding statement. Your time has expired.
So the board's determination is supported by substantial evidence. There are really only issues of fact in play. So we would submit that this court should affirm the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Degnan has about 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. On the design need, I want to just be very clear because I think perhaps we're ships passing in the night on this. The design need here arises from the fact in Hirayama is that whether or not to reproduce the icon of a selected icon during movement is a design parameter. You must make a choice in a graphical user interface whether or not to visually reproduce the icon. That is the design need. It is made extremely stark because the board did not, as counsel would have you believe, find that Hirayama discloses reproducing the icon. Because of the ambiguity finding, it is at most silent. It's unclear. And so we're not in a scenario where we're modifying Hirayama's disclosing of reproducing the icon and replacing it with something else. There's a gap. And the design need is filling that gap. And so we think that was fairly suggested in our reply. It's certainly the design need we're identifying now. it arises because of the board's findings. So that's the design need.
Do we have any cases applying KSR's design need scenario in that type of way?
When there's a gap that needs to be filled.
Or where you say it means you don't have to show a problem or market pressure or a reason someone would do this modification. That's what you're saying, because you acknowledge, I think, you don't have evidence of those things. So do we have any cases that would allow us to interpret the design need analysis the way you're doing it?
Okay, so I'm going to quibble just for a second with your suggestion that having to make a choice about how you would implement this user interface is not a design need. But if you want to construe design need as requiring a specific problem separate from the need to actually fill the gap, offhand, I will tell you, Judge Stark, I don't have a case. But I don't interpret KSR saying that design need is only a problem completely separate. Now, counsel wants us to look at the reference, and the reference, this is something you have to do, a choice you have to make if you're going to implement the graphical user interface. In terms of the notion of this is a binary choice, not all negative limitations are going to have this sort of binary choice. We're not advancing that position. Rather, certain fact patterns naturally lend themselves to a binary choice. In Uber, it was server-side plotting versus terminal-side plotting. In Echo, it was the thermal sensor above or below. And here, when you have this particular kind of limitation that excludes, prevents the option of showing the icon or not, this sort of factual pattern gives rise to the finite number, a binary choice of options. And so with that, we'd ask your honors to reverse the board on both issues. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, and this case is submitted.